Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John. John engineering and producing the show. The two of us say thanks for joining us on this Tuesday, the 28th day of June 2022, just about now 11 and a half years into our radio project. So 34th year on TV and radio in Tucson. We're broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station, easy to remember, KVOI, like K-Voice, 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's get right to it and go on the live line now for a conversation with Dustin Williams, Pima County Superintendent of Schools. He is a one-time school teacher who served a long time, actually, in the trenches, in the classroom. He's now in his second four-year term as superintendent of Pima County Schools. That office is very important here in town. It's responsible for all special school district elections. It processes the financial or the fiscal financial responsibilities for all Pima County school districts. And Dustin, good to have you back with us.
Bill, glad to be on with you and all of your great listeners.
Your portfolio is what? I tried to count it. I hope I counted it accurately. It's 18 school districts. Is that correct?
You're my number one fan. You got the data down correctly. We put about process about $1.5 billion a year, and the summers are our busiest time right now with governing board elections, bonds and overrides, and getting all that squared away.
Yeah, and getting ready for a new school year that we hope will be the first start to school year in a somewhat normal fashion. Is that your take on it, Dustin?
Yeah, we're really hoping that we get some good rest with the teachers and all the educators and staff and the kids, and hoping that creepy little virus COVID stays away as much as it possibly can, and just start a good, fresh year for 2022 and 2023.
Is this an education budget, that the education-friendly budget that lawmakers finally agreed on last week, Dustin?
Yeah, you know, ironically, it's late. They're all getting a tardy pass from me. I'm going to tell you that right now. It was way too late. It backs everything up. It's a challenge that way. But in some strange way, it's the first bipartisan little budget I've ever seen as an elected official in a long time in Arizona. And there were some good parts for education. They got some good money coming for the base funding. It's not going to get us out of the bottom of the bracket, maybe 45th in the nation, you might see somewhere in there. But it was good. We'll take it. There's some good parts and some bad parts.
Well, it provides record-level funding, according to the Arizona Chamber of Commerce, while modernizing K-12 funding to provide equity to students and reduce funding disparities between schools. Is that about right, or is that overly optimistic from our friends up at the Chamber?
Well, anytime the Chamber is excited about funding education, we like that because we want them to keep advocating at that legislature level. But we like it. There's some good money that went into the base funding, which is the core of per pupil funding. So when those students go to the school, you're going to see that $6,500 or that $7,000 per student funding bump up and hopefully get into the eights and so forth, where we can afford quality teachers, programs, curriculum, etc.
There are a couple of items that I wanted to share with our listeners and get your take on. Senate Bill 1159 is awaiting the governor's signature, and I don't really have an update. Maybe he signed it yesterday, but it expands these previous efforts to reform the antiquated teacher certification system. Some of your thoughts on that, Dustin?
I think what you're seeing right now is all hands on deck to figure out how we get more bodies in the schools. And the measures of taking this teacher shortage that we have, and just personnel shortage in general, is a big challenge right now, because even if we can get the funding levels up, if the governor can help with different measures to, you know, certify our teachers. The fact is we still have shortages in those classrooms. And when you have those shortages, someone's got to take over the slack, and that's where you get the burnout. And so that is the big issue when we look at these measures of certification or bolstering any sort of program to get more bodies in the schools.
I mean, it has been this last school year, especially as we closed out the spring semester, all hands on deck, as you say. We even had Dr. Trujillo from TUSD, the superintendent, into the classroom teaching a class. The next thing will be actually calling you, calling you, Dustin, to get back. And as I recall, you are a pretty fine math teacher. You may get a call someday here.
You know what? If they need me, they know where to find me. I'd be more than happy to sub in for a class anytime. We spent a lot of we spent as much time as we still could visiting the schools and putting in programs and helping out, but it was a wild year. We saw administrators doing some of the bus routes. We saw superintendents jumping into the classrooms. We saw office managers subbing for teachers, teachers doing double shifts. It was a wild, wild year. We, you know, hopefully that settles down. Hopefully we can get a lot of people hired over the summer and just have a stronger year as far as personnel goes in the schools.
One other thing, SB 1613, Dustin Williams, will give some additional transit options for students that are safe, reliable, and efficient. I wasn't really aware of this, but I saw it. Apparently, our Arizona student transportation regulations were badly outdated.
Yeah, you've got a lot of sort of classifications of vehicles that you must have where they were passenger vans at certain ratings. And the reality is we have all sorts of students that need to be transferred to and from schools and sometimes after schools and some of our special education students and athletic students and the whole gambit. And, you know, we don't want to compromise safety ever. But sometimes you got to revisit the rules and say, hey, is it practical? And most importantly, how do we start getting students to the campuses to make sure they're getting the best education possible?
Bottom line on the no new rules in Arizona this year for teaching race. The bottom line is that this will be the second year in a row that lawmakers have been unable, Dustin, to enact what has been labeled as a restriction on so-called critical race theory. And lots of people are saying amen to that and are happy that it's the second year that no action was taken.
You know, Bill, to be really quite honest to all the listeners and everyone there and all my 20, 25 years in education, we never talked critical race theory. It became a politicized bully pulpit. It needs to stay out of the schools. Let the teachers do what they do best, which is take care of those kids at all levels. That's from our districts, charters, privates, homeschool. Let them just do what they do best, which is take care of them kids, give them the best education possible, and let's just have a fun time in school and get back to teaching the kids.
You said at the beginning of our talk that summer is your busiest time of year. Explain that to our listeners. This is not your downtime, I guess, Dustin Williams.
Yeah, your elected office, county school superintendents, right here at 200 North Stone, we are deep in the trenches of putting, we're an election office as well. So we're putting, getting all the governing board members that are your policy holders and authority for schools that want to run in November. We're going through all their paperwork right now, so that's all day long. We're putting together some bonds and overrides for schools that will be also putting that on the ballot. And then we're setting your qualifying tax rates. And so when the budget is laid at the state, we have to do all the end-of-the-year budgets with the schools. That means we have to rework all these numbers because we're just getting the state numbers. Mm. So it's kind of double work for us, and we really would appreciate in the future, the budget's coming as early as possible, but right now it is long days, and it will be until about once schools get going again in August.
Well, you can't even think about a summer vacation, I guess, Dustin Williams. I'm sure, well, I should say you can think about it, but it's not happening. So we appreciate the work you're doing. Thank you.
I appreciate it. It's an honor to work and serve for this county. I love Pima County constituents, and I love education.
Thank you very much. Hope you have a great rest of the day. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Take care.
All right. Dustin Williams, he is the superintendent of schools in Pima County. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, our education contributor, Dr. Robert Hendricks, former Arizona School Superintendent of the Year, will also comment on education and what he saw coming out of that state budget as we take a deep dive into education today on the Buckmaster Show. All right, I want to take a deep dive into Mona's Danish Bakery. That'd be easy to do right about now. I'm hungry for something sweet. I could use a nice piece of carrot cake, I think, to get me going here from Mona's. Mona's Danish Bakery, they're open right now for lunch, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Steve and the team, very busy. They were able to take a couple of days off. They're back at it now. They open for breakfast 6:30 in the morning, Tuesday through Sunday. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. Coming up next, Shelly Fishman over in San Diego. Shelly can run, but he can't hide from a Tuesday because the market's reacting in somewhat typical Tuesday fashion. Not a great day on the markets. Buckmaster Show after this. Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Shelly Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelly through buckmastershow.com or at shellyfishman.com.
And here he is via the live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Shelly Fishman over in San Diego. Shell, how's it going over in the... one of the most beautiful areas in the world, really, in the San Diego area. How is it over there today?
Well, it's been warm. They're having a little bit of a hot spell, but it's not as warm as it is in Tucson. It is more humid. But this is a really great place to get away to.
Shelley, it is Tuesday, and I was hoping there would be better news because the markets kind of digested over the weekend some news that could have been taken in the wrong way by the markets, but I guess they were postponing it for Tuesday.
Well, you know, Bill, last week the markets reacted very, very well to relative quiet about economic stuff. You know, the United States population was somewhat distracted last week by stuff going on at the Supreme Court, and the news media weren't talking so much about inflation. They were talking more about you know what had happened with the abortion decision and also the Second Amendment decision. And I think the markets kind of breathed a sigh of relief and had a really nice week last week. Over the weekend, we didn't see any remorse for that good news. And I really thought that the markets would do very well yesterday. And they started off doing really very well yesterday. And then something caught up, not quite sure what. And the markets wound up yesterday down a bit. Today, on the other hand, they're not down a bit. They're down a bunch. And what seems to be happening is that what the markets are trying to digest is the effect on, and going forward, of course, not looking backward, but going forward, the effect of higher interest rates, but also what is being called a whiplash or a whipsaw effect on inflation. What this is that when the supply chains became really troubled, as they were in the first quarter, and companies started stocking up as much as they could on inventory in order to meet increased demand, you know, all this pent-up demand, then demand just started backing off a bit. The shelves on, you know, in supermarkets and you know, just in general, the shelves got full again. And companies said, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen here? We've got too much inventory. That costs us too much. And they started issuing some cautions about earnings in the second quarter because of all of the inventory they have. And so that spooked the markets a little bit yesterday afternoon, and that's continuing till today. And the good news is that'll probably bring down inflation. The bad news is we might get some second and third quarter cautionary statements by those companies that issue those kinds of things. And so the markets are really, again, just in this volatile up and down, even intraday, not knowing quite how to take it.
We had Secretary of Transportation Buttigieg over in not far from you, a little bit north of you, up in the Long Beach area, against a backdrop of these huge container ships. He was talking with the media about the backlog, and it's still very much a backlog. And we've made some progress, but there's still a long way to go, Shelley Fishman.
Absolutely. There's still supply chain issues that are very, very real and are causing inflationary pressures in the areas that we hear about in the news all the time. So we're still having problems with chip makers and getting the electronic components that car makers need and other electronics manufacturers need to complete the assemblies to get their stuff to the marketplace. We're having some problems worldwide with food and with foodstuffs, especially since what we see with Ukraine and Russia not being able to ship the foodstuffs they need, especially to Africa. So those problems continue, and again, investors are speculating from day to day, up and down, about how to take those things. We finally got some good news today, might have been overnight, from China. China is easing restrictions on their zero COVID policies and opening up the cities that have been closed down. And what that means is that people who have not been allowed to leave their homes are now being allowed to go back to work. So that should open up the supply chains a bit. Now, if that stuff can't get to our ports, because our ports are still jammed up, you know, well, we'll see. But the reports I was reading this morning about the, you know, fairly rapid increase in supplies of especially component parts and from China should, again, have an easing effect on inflation. And that will cause, I think, some less pessimism, let me put it that way, on the part of those people who depend on those supply streams to get their stuff completed, assembled, and then out to the marketplace.
We need to evaluate the difference between a bounce in a bear market versus the start of a more durable advance, Shelley Fishman.
Yeah, you tell me how to do that, and you and I will publish a book. So, you know, when we see a bounce, even over an extended period like a week, it's nice to think, okay, we're over the worst of it, and now things are coming back.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we see Tuesday. And Tuesdays happen every week, last time I checked. And so we see a day like today. Now, we're down off the lows, but we still have to get something fundamental changing in the economy before I think we'll see a bounce that has some staying power. We're not seeing fundamental changes in the economy, and we're seeing some people talking about the fact that we might even be in a recession. Other people saying, no, not only don't, you know, aren't we in a recession, but we probably won't see a recession for 5 or 6 or 7 quarters. I happen to believe that the latter statements are more correct than the former ones. Nevertheless, you know, time will have to tell on that, Bill. So, you know, the markets look forward. If they look forward to a recessionary period, markets are going to stay low, maybe even go lower. If, on the other hand, we see demand remaining high, we see no fundamental changes in the economy in terms of demand, in terms of employment, certainly employment, and we see inflation backing off, I think we could, you know, pop out of this, as I've said, by the end of the year and see markets turn around such that we have, a somewhat positive year.
I think, and, you know, for what it's worth, let's put it this way, the clear catalyst for kind of a meaningful rebound hasn't surfaced yet, and what that will look like will be good news on the inflation front. Would you generally agree with that?
I would agree that good news on the inflation front is one of the most important things that the markets and companies will need to see in order to begin to forecast better quarters ahead. But it's not the only thing. Inflation is very, very important, but the employment measures are also very important, Bill, and those have been massively positive quarter after quarter, actually month after month, because that's the way we get those reports. I mean, we've seen, you know, unemployment down below 4%, and month after month, we see a greater number of people in the population looking for jobs and finding them, and we still have close to 5 million jobs that are unfilled. That, to me, is as big a factor. You know, if I'm managing a company, and I've managed a couple, if I'm managing a company, that's as important to me as inflation numbers.
Well, that's what in many ways makes this downturn such very anomalous, as an anomaly, that we have people begging, employers begging for people to come to work. And that's not usually the case when you have kind of a big market downturn.
Anomaly is exactly the right word. Economists are going to be looking at these 18 or 24 months, probably for the next decade or so, and trying to figure out not only why it worked that way, but try to figure out, as we did with the 1970s and 80s, try to figure out how we can prevent this from happening again. And I think economists will take a look at this decade or this couple of years, take a look at the pandemic and say, what can we do to make sure that this kind of worldwide anomaly will not crash our economies? Because we've been pretty good over the past 30, 35, 40 years at really engineering, these soft landings. Now, whether Powell and the people who run the economy can do that again, not just here, but worldwide, is yet to be seen. But that is certainly, it's stability and lack of surprises that economists and people who manage the economy try to engineer and try to understand. And that's what we're going to see, I think, in the headlines of the business sections and papers over the next, probably 2 or 3 years.
All right, Shelley, we're still waiting for a good rain here in Tucson. So I hope we get some really good rain before you return in a couple of weeks.
Well, let me see. What I can tell you is there's no sign that we're going to send it from Southern California to you guys, because it ain't here.
It's not over there for sure. Shelley, have a great rest of the week. Thank you.
You too, Bill. Bye-bye.
All right.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for Marketplace Trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. We love green things, and green things, like all of us, waiting for a good rain. The rain will come. It might not be today. I hope it is, but it's going to come, I hope, within a week. So let's see if we can get some rain. And in the meantime, Green Things is waiting for you with some beautiful things for the garden. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. 13-acre site with so many beautiful things for your garden, along with beautiful things at Zocalo Village. All that merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Come tour the five shops at Zocalo Village. Their websites, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education, where he's the former head of the Department of Educational Policy Studies and Practice. The former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, Dr. Hendricks, is also a former Arizona top school superintendent. He joins us now on the live line from, I believe, San Diego. Hey, it's a good place to be. Yes. Shelley Fishman was over there, and so is
right.
So is Bob Hendricks. There you go.
I don't know where Shelley is, but he can certainly share in the wonderful weather we're having here. Sunny, and it's been, you know, since we've been here, it's been sort of hovering around 70 degrees. And, you know, there's not much change. Clouds come in the morning and the sun comes out. And that's pretty much a description of the climate.
You were listening in as we spoke with Dustin Williams, superintendent of Pima County Education. We're going all in today on kind of reviewing education and what came out of the state budget. My first question for Dustin, as you heard, was when all was said and done, Bob Hendricks, was this an education-friendly budget that was passed?
I think it's a win for education, and what probably impresses me most was that it got bipartisan approval. That's very, very rare. Usually, you know, the Democrats and Republicans in the House and the Senate go loggerheads on these things, and there was really some cooperation, I think, to pass what is essentially a $526 million budget, which represents, so when you look at the budget capacity, the ongoing capacity for Arizona state budget, it's about half the budget. And that money is going to go to teacher salaries. It's going to go to additional staffing, probably in those schools that, you know, have lower economic student populations. it's also going to go, as money is going to go to special education, which is always a difficult area to fund the capacity that's needed. So, you know, I think it's a good first step. I mean, it's not what a lot of educators would like to have had. I mean, they were talking about $1 billion, you know, but you've got, you know, you've got a lot of money that's put in here. As Dustin said, it's probably going to move us to from almost dead last to about 45th or 46th, you know, in the nation. It's positive movement. And so never going to complain about that. I think I think it's good to see that base funding up there. Let's remember that base funding, though, always is based on enrollment counts. And so, you know, if populations of student enrollments go down, those schools and school districts are not going to get as much of that money. And that's why the other piece of legislation, which I'm not happy about, is the expansion of school vouchers. We're now going to, you know, we're now going to have the distinction again of being one of the largest landmark pieces of legislation to expand school vouchers in the country. And, you know, we're already there with charter schools, and now we've sort of the last hanging piece was private schools, sectarian schools. We've held off on that for a long time. We've held off on it for about 10 years. But now that piece has fallen, too, and it's going to be, you know, kind of open season for anybody who wants to apply for a voucher.
What does that do to our public school system, Bob Hendricks?
Well, for every student who leaves the public school system, the money goes with them. And so, you know, funding is based on essentially counting heads. And so school districts receive their money by the enrollment count. And so if the enrollment count is down, they're going to get less in their budget. So, again, every student who is lured away from the public school system, and when I say public school system, Bill, I'm including charter schools. So, you know, that's all part of the formula. So charter schools don't benefit by this. Traditional public schools don't benefit by it. The schools are going to benefit are the private and the sectarian schools. And, you know, I don't want to be caustic about this, but quite honestly, this is not going to benefit lower income kids who could possibly take advantage of this if their parents wanted to send them to a sectarian school or private school, because essentially a voucher is a coupon. And this coupon is going to be worth about $7,000. That's considered what the give or take the value of one student's contribution to the overall education enterprise. So they get this voucher for $7,000, and they can apply through the State Department of Education to get approval, and they can go to that they can apply to any school they want theoretically in the state. Well, we've talked about this before. The so-called prestigious private schools in the state, you can take your $7,000 in there, but you're going to have to pay the difference between what that voucher is worth and what the tuition is going to be. And in many cases, and I haven't looked at this lately, but in many cases, that $7,000 represents about a third of the tuition for those types of schools. So I have to ask myself the question, who benefits from that voucher? It is not the middle income or the low income child. It is the child who's already have some degree of privilege. They can go to those schools now, and their parents receive a discount.
Bob, I wanted to add here, we had a listener who said sarcastically, just messaged me, yes, it's pretty bad allowing students to have a choice to move to a better education. What do you say to that listener?
Well, I could answer that question a number of ways. I would say it depends on the school. I mean, there are all flavors of excellence and mediocrity in public education. I would agree that there are good schools and not so good schools in traditional K-12, in charter schools. I'll also say that could be the case in private schools as well. Just because they're private, because they're exclusive, doesn't mean that they have a better education. Part of the problem, Bill, is that we don't know, because private schools, sectarian schools, are not subject to the same regulations. They do not have to give achievement tests. They do not have to give standardized measurements. They don't have to report them to the state. They don't have to report them to parents. And so the measuring stick is different. I would share with that listener the fact that, maybe a particular school, maybe a particular private school, is better for that particular child. But we don't know. We don't know, because the state has not imposed the same requirements, the same standards that they've placed on traditional K-12 and also on charter schools. So it's outside the realm, although the money is now being allowed to go there. And so could be good, could be bad, could be some kind of a storefront in a mall that, you know, is privatized, not part of the charter system. But, you know, parents could, if they hang up a shingle, there's no standards, there's no requirements, they can do that as a private school. And the ones I'm talking about are the ones that are established and, have an oversight, a governance oversight. But there are other examples, and, I can't cite them here in the state, but I can give lots of examples in other states where it's really become kind of a scam. And so we certainly don't want that to happen in Arizona. I'm not suggesting that it will, but I'm saying that there needs to be some kind of modern monitoring mechanism, at least in a level playing field, so that parents can make those judgments
for
themselves.
We're going to pause right here. More with Bob Hendricks after we take a break, and talk a little bit more about the legislature's decision on education, which generally seems to be getting pretty good marks when it comes to education funding. We'll be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where it's going to be cooler over in Silver City. We usually say about maybe 10 degrees at least. They're having a lot of rain, the rain I wish we would be getting. They've had about 10 days of good rains off and on over there at 73 at midday over there. Things have really greened up over in the Gila National Wilderness. Would be a great opportunity to take a road trip. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org, a good place to find out about things to do. And there are a lot of them, and some great places to stay as well. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. We continue now with our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education. Let's move on from the school voucher topic to this whole thing about teaching critical race theory. As I mentioned in our interview at the beginning of the program with Dustin Williams, it's the second year in a row, Dr. Hendricks, that lawmakers have been unable to enact what they have labeled as restrictions on critical race theory. This keeps coming up before the legislature, and some people are breathing a sigh of relief that nothing got done in that area.
Well, this is an area where I really try to sidestep. Because quite honestly, my personal experience with teachers and my understanding of curriculum as it's being currently implemented in the state of Arizona, it's not really a major issue. Maybe it is in some states. Maybe it is in some school districts. But as I look at things, you know, in our current environment, in Arizona, which we tend to be fairly conservative, I don't think that this is a starter right now. But I'm very happy that it's been left alone. I do know that, you know, coming from a university environment, this is a hot topic. It's been a hot topic for years. And I know professors who have made this, you know, part of their curriculum and part of their advocacy, but it hasn't trickled down in the public school system that I'm aware of. And frankly, I hope as current practice, it doesn't. I think we can allow our teachers the benefit of following the curriculum that's prescribed by the state and by the school districts. And if they stick to that script, there should not be a problem.
The governor apparently were awaiting signature on that effort to reform the antiquated teacher certificate system. We've talked about that before, about getting more teachers in the classroom, people that have an expertise in a particular area, getting them into the classroom without a lot of paperwork. And we've talked about this before. It really hasn't done a whole lot so far in getting more teachers in the classroom, has it?
No, it hasn't. And I think, you know, if, as I understand the current proposed legislation, they really want to be able to meet the need by including people who maybe don't have a lot of formal training in teaching, in the pedagogy of teaching, but simply that they have a college degree. I have some real concerns about that. It kind of suggests to me that, well, if you got a college degree, you've got the skill set to teach. I don't believe that. And I come out of a college education that believes that there are a set of skills that one needs to have to be an effective teacher. And so the question to me is not whether you need that skill set or not. The question is, how long does it take you to get that? And so my suggestion, my advocacy would be, let's try to put together plans. There are some plans right now for alternative education certification in the state of Arizona. That's a shorter timeline, that some of it actually takes place as the person is working in the school district. There's mentoring, there's after work, there's weekend training. In other words, bring these people in with that degree, maybe without that battery of skills, but bring them along, help them, you know, while they're in the classroom. And there are states and there are school districts that are doing this. Essentially what some districts have done, have created their own training program. And could, in fact, under maybe this legislation or under proposal as a companion to this, propose to the state, yes, we allow us to do the training of the teachers. Let us help them get the skill set. Let them do their student teaching and all of those things that are part of the traditional program, you know, on their feet, you know, as they're there, as they're working, as they're getting paid. You know, the idea anymore that a teacher would need 4 years of paid tuition to become a teacher, I think is antiquated, given that the salaries that we pay teachers, it doesn't make economic sense, you know, for teachers to spend that kind of money for, if you want to think about it in terms of return for the dollar. So let's find workable paths that include training, you know, on the job. And I think this would help solve the problem. I mean, it's very, very concerning to me that you pick up the newspaper, particularly Sundays, and you see ads for teachers for other states with comprehensive benefits and so forth. I mean, people are going to try to steal anywhere they can, beg, borrow, or steal to get teachers, you know, out of our community to go somewhere else.
Yep. So we're going to have to.
We've got to have other options.
All right, we're going to leave it right there, Dr. Robert Hendricks. Always a pleasure. Enjoy your time over in San Diego, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
All right.
Okay.
On behalf of Dr. Hendricks and John Engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster saying, stick around. We've got Dave Ramsey, his very popular show about your money. That's coming up after the CBS Network News at the top of the hour here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Have a great afternoon.